Good afternoon. My name is Sylvie, and I will be your conference operator today. At this time, I would like to welcome everyone to the Australis Capital Investor Call. Note that all lines have been placed on mute to prevent any background noise. After the speaker's remarks, there will be a question and answer session. If you would like to ask a question during this time, simply press star then the number one on your telephone keypad. Due to the number of participants on the call, we have limited participants to one question during the Q&A session. And if you would like to withdraw your question, simply press star followed by two. Mr. Brent Reuters, you may now begin.
Thank you, operator, and hello, everyone. Thank you for joining the Australis Capital Investor Call today. My name is Brent Reuter. As Sylvie indicated, I lead the Investor Relations Group for Australis Capital. We thank you for taking the time to hear from our management team this afternoon and on the investor update related to our press release yesterday. We announced the expansion of our fintech platform, which will now include gaming through the proposed acquisition of Passport Technology and also details on our private placement. On the line today from Australis Capital is Cleve Zung, who's moved from his role as Chief Revenue Officer to Chief Executive Officer. And we also have Scott Doughty, who with the acquisition of Passport has moved from CEO to Executive Chairman. We'll walk through the investment deck this afternoon, and concluding our presentation, we will open the lines for investors. We've allotted 15 minutes for Q&A, so we'll have lots of time for investor questions, and we certainly hope that we hear from you. So without further ado, I will hand it over to Scott to start the presentation. And I think for those that are on the line and have the investment deck in front of them, I would take your attention to slide four. We're going to start with the AUSA timeline slide.
Hey, Brent, this is Cleve, actually. I'll start the call, and then we'll turn it over to Scott here. So this is Cleve Zung speaking, and like Brent said, I'd like to thank everyone for participating in this call. You know, we announced the acquisition of Passport yesterday, and we felt that it was important to get out to our shareholders today to provide you with some insight into the strategy, the company itself, and Scott's going to take you through that. I've been here about a year and a half. I've been here since 2018, and I think that, you know, I personally am sensitive. I think we all are, the management team and as a board, to kind of the journey that the shareholders have been on. We recognize that we really haven't communicated with the shareholders in this way in some time, and so we understand that there is, you know, a need for a little bit of transparency and a need for a little bit of understanding, and that's what we're trying to provide here. We're also committing to providing information over the coming weeks as it becomes available. I think you will see some very exciting and positive developments with Passport over the coming weeks, and so as those become available, we're going to take the opportunity to provide you with some more insight onto those. So we have an investor deck for you, and I'm going to turn this call over to Scott right now, and he's going to walk through the initial slides of the deck and provide you with the insight into the company and as well as the strategy. So, Scott.
Thank you, Cleve. Thank you, Brent. Thank you, operator. We'll start with this timeline, and you know, like Cleve said, we are very sensitive, and during the last couple of years as CEO and in the interviews I've done, both on, you know, podcasts and on TV, you know, we've always mentioned that we're very sensitive to our shareholders. We've always mentioned that we are a company that are built on very strong governance and always doing the right thing. With that being said, you know, I'm also an investor in a lot of small companies in this space, and oftentimes myself say, what are these people doing? I'm not getting enough information. I don't understand what's going on. So, you know, again, just to you know, make this fact very clear, we are sensitive to the questions you're going to have with this move, this transformation, and absolutely going to be transparent going forward. Now, just on this timeline, you know, we've had a very, very, very up and down couple of years as a company. When we were IPO'd from Aurora back in 2018, you know, that was a IPO that was already structured and put together by Aurora. Our teams were hired on thereafter, and we did the IPO. unfortunately, as a company, you know, when the spinoff took place, Astralis inherited a lot of assets that were not probably the greatest assets. Again, things that we didn't have control, but we had to manage those. We also had to execute on a couple initial deals back then as well that, you know, knowing what we know today, we never would have done. And then as you move through the timeline here, you know, it takes us to Folium Biosciences, which was absolutely a decision in our control. And, of course, we spent some money, we spent some time on that. And I think through very strong governance, a great audit process, due diligence through our accounting team led by Alex Hahn, who's now our CFO, we uncovered some things we really didn't like. So although that did burn some cash and some time, the reality is the strong governance of our team enabled us to back out of a deal that would not have been in the interest of our valued shareholders, of which some of you are on the phone today. And that really takes us to, you know, February of 2020, where we started really thinking about, you know, with all the data we have as a company, and all the bodies that we see in the cannabis landscape, the dead bodies and dying bodies, the reality is this company has done a pretty good job at conserving cash, conserving assets. And with that data, and like we said from the very beginning, we never really wanted to be a dispensary or a grow. We always wanted to play between the bookends. And that's why Astralis bought essentially the concept and the product of Cocoon, which is the fintech platform that resides in dispensaries, that is available to place in dispensaries in every jurisdiction in North America today without the licensing requirements and without the excessive overhead. So as these large MSOs are gaining success, and there's only a few of them that are making money, we're able to partner with them today in any jurisdiction without a lot of those handcuffs. So that's why we kind of went into the Cocoon space with a fintech platform. And, of course, that's then why we acquired Patron, which is a small ISO in April 8, 2020. And then, of course, the news yesterday of Passport is absolutely synergistic to both Patron and Cocoon, and I'll explain why as we go through the deck. So I just wanted to kind of walk through the timeline a bit, and we can move on from there, Brent. Brent, are you still on?
Yeah, I'm on. I just moved the slide there.
Yeah, it's taking a time to... Not updating on my... Here it is. Okay. There's a bit of a time delay, folks, on my screen here of about 3 or 4 seconds. So, you know, ASA Corporation, which is, again, something that we announced yesterday, is going to be a company, a fintech platform, in highly regulated industries. Gaming is obviously one of those. Cannabis is one of those. And, of course, there's going to be other opportunities in other kind of vertically integrated markets that are associated with gaming, cash access, and cannabis that we'll be able to move into very fluidly. And if you look at highly regulated industries that require privileged licenses, both cannabis and gaming fit into that pocket. For example, the same person in Alberta, a province in Canada, for those of you that are not Canadian, the same person, the same department that manage privileged licenses for cannabis and gaming are the same. So just from a pure licensing and privileged licensing perspective, there's a lot of synergies between cannabis and cash access. And as you look through the U.S. landscape in a lot of these jurisdictions, you know, the same is true. So just purely from a licensing perspective, and licenses drive high barrier to entry, there's a lot of synergies from relationships that we have both on the ASA side and both on the Passport side, that we can leverage to expand Cocoon into these new markets and as well expand Passport, should the proposed transaction be approved, into markets in the United States. So, you know, the slide here just kind of talks about the fintech platform, you know, how it will evolve. It'll start with, you know, obviously Cocoon today, Passport if it's approved. And again, there's several other synergistic verticals that we would be able to move in into with our platform kiosk, which is focused on unattended terminals. And, you know, the capability is to develop custom solutions to resolve pain points for specific verticals will be very easy for ASA Corporation to do. So, you know, an investor shouldn't look at this just as cannabis, gaming, and Patreon. We will be able to leverage this very unique, robust, proprietary fintech platform to expand into many other verticals. But our focus will be verticals that have a high barrier to entry. As Brent moves on, you know, into this page, you might have read that Walmart is going to be moving away from cashiers in all their stores over time. Well, we don't want to play in that space because the barrier to entry isn't that high. But there's going to be a plethora of opportunities and verticals where licensing is required, AML is important, knowing your customer, KYC is important. Those are the types of environments where we want to live. So on the platform build-out, both the Passport and Cocoon technology reside on a very similar platform. As I said before, they're unattended terminals. And what that means is it's a kiosk or a terminal that you can go into a dispensary, in this case with Passport, into a casino. You can initiate a transaction. You can get approvals. You can shop for merchandise in the case of Cocoon. You can pay with cash on the kiosk in the case of Cocoon. They'll be layered with compliance type software. So for example, in a certain state where you have to use your ID, it'll accept ID. It'll integrate with ERP systems. It'll integrate with loyalty systems. And again, all of this resides in the cloud. So there's very little overhead or infrastructure, fully redundant. And again, the ability for us to parachute these robots, these kiosks from the cloud into dispensaries, into casinos around the world, have those, what I would call robots, transact throughout the day, processing transactions where ASA Corp will receive revenue and contribution for each one of those passports with very limited support from a labor perspective. This is the kind of business that, you know, from a business planning perspective, is hard to beat. When we sign deals with both Cocoon and Passport, we're signing exclusive arrangements for long-term contracts that drive very consistent revenue. So from a revenue generation perspective, contribution and profitability perspective, we will have very good visibility on what those opportunities look like. And then lastly on this slide, as we've built out, the scalability and the portability of this platform is almost second to none. In Passport's case, we can essentially triple our business in Canada tomorrow and maybe add one person. That's the type of scalability we're talking about here. And again, we're also talking about hardware and software that we've built. It's proprietary, it's custom, and we can build it out in other synergistic verticals as well. Want to move on, Brett? This delay is a little painful. Okay, so it's probably a 10-second delay. as I just said, you know, when I think about Passport, you know, I could speak from experience over the last 4 years, and Cocoon is being built the same way. You know, if you focus on the left in the purple, the types of relationships and customers we're signing, if you look in the case of Passport, some of the most storied casino operators around the world are our customers, and they engage 3 to 5 year exclusive agreements, which drive recurring, predictable transaction revenue and profitability. As I said, it's scalable. We can grow, expand our footprint in any country without adding a lot of overhead. We can actually port our platform, say, from the UK and Canada, in Passport's case, to Asia very easily. From a technology perspective, it's almost like, you know, we transfer it to the Microsoft Azure cloud in Asia, you know, copy, paste, add a couple of local relationships, and we're off to the races. So we've built a very highly scalable and portable platform. There's significant growth in gaming. For those of you who aren't familiar with that market, if you look at the, you know, demographics around the world, with the Asian folks traveling more and more, the baby boomers in North America and Europe traveling, most destinations people travel to have casinos. Clearly, the last 4 months with COVID, you know, there's been questions around casinos, cruise ships. The reality is, and based on our very recent data, the Passport casinos that have opened up in the last 2 weeks, for example, our revenue is up close to 60% year over year, believe it or not. So people will keep on gambling. The demographics behind travel, baby boomers retiring, and gambling continue to be a hockey stick. So we're very excited about that. And when you look at Cocoon, again, we can operate in every jurisdiction that is legal today in North America. We are not restricted by licenses, and we are not handcuffed by or burdened by an excessive amount of overhead. Both Cocoon and Passport have a global opportunity ahead of them today. Passport operates in Cyprus. We process at Casino Monaco. We process throughout the UK, and we process across Canada. All right, so this slide here, we're just talking kind of a bit about the Passport product set. So just to talk a bit about what Passport does. You know, I've got 20 years, but going on to 25 now in the fintech space. I was with a company called Global Cash Access, who's the largest cash access provider in the world, for many, many years, and I left in 2014. I knew what I wanted to do, and that's when myself and my partner, Kurt Sullivan, went out and built Passport Technology, and we went out to the UK to focus on that business first. And what Passport does is essentially we process transactions on the casino floor. Every market, every country, every state in the United States, every province in Canada is different. There's regulatory bodies that manage cash access and gaming equipment in these casinos. We went to the UK first with Passport, and I'm going to focus a little bit on Passport here because I know there's a lot of questions. Passport is one of the most, UK is one of the most highly governed gaming jurisdictions in the world. And one of the things we do at Passport, which will also serve any cannabis company well, is rather than fear regulators, we embrace them. So as we enter a market like the UK, as we entered Ontario, Alberta, and BC, we go to the regulators first, we present our products, we tell them why this is a great product for the operator, for the consumers using it, and then we ask for their feedback. We want to understand the regulator's mandate for social responsibility, you know, problem gambling, AML, you know, privacy, data protection. So we always get with the regulators first to customize our products to ensure it meets the mandate of any regulator in that jurisdiction. It's the first thing we do. And then, of course, we also sell all the great feature functionality our products have for the operator. We've got, you know, self-exclusion for people who don't want to gamble too much. We've got dynamic pricing for VIPs. We have the ability to offer free play versus maybe a lower fee for, to accept cash. So we have a lot of custom features for the casino, for the player, but more important, we ensure that the gaming regulators are on side and that we're building a product that they know will be synergistic and add value to all stakeholders. And then lastly on this slide, Cash Valet is a kiosk that provides debit and credit cash advances. They're authorized at that kiosk, and then someone would go to the cashier in the casino to complete the cash transaction. They'll either get cash or chips, and they're off to play. And below, that's an ATM, a very, very robustly built ATM that's currently in about two or three casinos in Alberta. I think we've got 45 of those placed in Alberta today. So that's that page. Just lastly, though, if you look at the graph in the middle there, as you can see, Passport has grown double digits since 2016. We've ensured we do everything right. We cross T's, we dot I's, and with that, in our slow growth strategy from UK to Europe to Canada, we've been able to grow our revenues and our profitability double digits year over year. And even with the COVID shutdown the last 3 or 4 months, based on the numbers we're seeing now, we think 2020 will absolutely be in line with that. And based on the contracts Passport has signed in the last few months and the ones that you'll be reading about very shortly, we think 2021 is going to be a blowout year for Passport. The slide you're looking at now, I won't go into too much detail, but this just represents kind of the ecosystem that we have here in Canada. We've got a similar one for Europe and the UK, and as we move into the US and or Asia, we'd have a very similar ecosystem here as well. And all it just shows you is all the stakeholders in the process that we have developed to process and settle transactions. So I'm not going to go too much into detail here, Brent, other than that this process here essentially resides in the cloud. It's custom built. It's fully redundant. We are very big on privacy, very big on AML, very big on building a scalable, portable platform that we can move from market to market as well as customize without a lot of cost. So this slide here, on the right, you'll see a lot of Passport's customers. You'll note some of the biggest operators in the world, Caesars, Genting, you know, River Cree for those folks in Alberta, Pure Casinos. It's a combination of operators in Europe, UK, and Canada. And again, as I've said in the last couple of slides, in the middle, we absolutely are committed from a regulatory compliance perspective on being the good guy in the space. So our focus on regulation, licensing, compliance, AML, social responsibility, and the needs of our operators is very synergistic to what ASA is now doing with Cocoon and the dispensaries and the regulating bodies who govern the dispensaries. So this is another example of the synergies between operating in a highly regulated gaming environment as well as cannabis. They're very robust environments. There's a lot of transaction volumes, and there's a lot of opportunity to customize while always working with the regulatory bodies. And again, that's one of the reasons why Passport and Astralis felt it was such a good fit, is because there's a ton of synergies between cannabis and gaming in terms of regulatory compliance. Next slide.
Just flipped it, Scott.
Okay, so the slide here just talks a bit about you know, what an average Passport customer looks like. You know, it's very interesting. In the UK, the business is different than in Casino Monaco, different than in Cyprus, and actually different between the provinces, Ontario, BC, and Alberta. But the reality is this page here just shows you an example of what a single casino might look like in Canada versus the UK. In some casinos, Passport may have a full breadth of services, ATM, cash valet, cashless valet. Some casinos, like in the UK, we might just have cash valet. So the environments we operate in are very different, and I'll give you two examples. In the UK, we have many locations in downtown London in a district called Mayfair, where there's a lot of embassies, a lot of wealth, and we have a lot of VIPs playing in our casinos who have traveled from around the world, Middle East, Russia, example, that use our systems. They don't bring cash. So we will see 100,000 pound transactions by the same person day in and day out. In fact, we've had instances where we've done £1 million in transactions in one person in a single day where they pay 5.5%, you know, and our costs are below 2%. So you can do the math on that. And there's other ways we drive revenue, like dynamic currency conversion, where there's international players playing in the UK or Canada. So versus a casino in Canada where we might have ATMs placed, like River Cree in Alberta, and we have cash valet, but the transaction amounts are very lower. But for every transaction we have in the UK, we've got 500 in Canada. So what I'm saying here is we've got a lot of different types of casinos, a lot of different types of players around the world that are all driving different types of revenue per transaction and profitability per transaction. But when you normalize all of that, the margins that Passport are delivering are much higher than any other vertical in the fintech landscape. They're a highly profitable company, and more than anything, as we double our footprint like we will in Canada the next, you know, 2 or 3 months, we might add one body. So our profitability will only get better as we scale. And that's to say that, you know, we've done a very good job in the UK, about 50% market share. We think we'll be at 45 to 50% market share in Canada within the next year or so. And we haven't even touched the US yet. And if I have an investor, if you were part of the original investors in Passport in 2016, you would have heard my conviction and confidence. Well, we essentially exceeded every target we had as a small company. I have more conviction today on the opportunity of Passport within the Asta Corporation family, if this transaction is approved, with our entrance in the U.S., which represents about 90% plus of the world's gaming / payments revenue opportunity. And that's a good segue to this slide. This slide just shows some of the market opportunity that we believe, you know, is of interest to Passport. We're obviously already in UK. We're already in parts of Europe. We actually have terminals on 4 or 5 cruise ships that are obviously shut down now. You know, from a cruise ship perspective, they're building more cruise ships today than they've ever had. And again, with the demographics changing, that's going to be a big business for us in the future. We're already in Canada, but of course, we have big views and visions to enter the United States. It's an absolutely huge market. Me and my team know it very well. We know the weaknesses of the big players today. And if and when, highlight when, we enter the U.S. market, we will be highly pragmatic, very strategic, state to state, and we will execute like we have done in every other jurisdiction so far. And again, just to highlight, we've pretty much got between 40 and 50% in every jurisdiction we've entered. Not to say we'll do that in the United States, but even if we do 10% or 5% market penetration in the States in a year or two or three, the revenue opportunity for ASA Corporation, you know, is going to be a upwards of an eight-digit revenue number, and that's if we fall on our face entering the U.S. market. Obviously, historically, if you look at what we've done historically from an execution perspective, there's really not much more to say other than that we've done very, very well as a company. Next slide. Okay. This kind of just highlights the United States as well. So, again, we've had a lot of discussions with Asta Corporation. As you all know, you know, this being an arm's length transaction, I have not been included in any of the discussions Asta Corp has had. I only represent Passport in these discussions. However, when we look at the opportunity in entering the U.S., we can very easily port our existing platform in the United States to penetrate these key markets that we see as a low-hanging fruit for us. We have a lot of relationships in these markets. And again, the revenue opportunities with landing just a few of these customers would be tens and tens and hundreds of millions of dollars in revenue. So we're very excited about that. We can build it organically, but there's also several very attractive tuck-in acquisition opportunities in the U.S. that are synergistic with our existing platforms that have a very good solid book of business, but with incredible green space opportunities. So whether we do it organically or through acquisition or a combination of both, the U.S. is going to offer Passport and Asta Corporation, should the deal be approved, significant near-term opportunity. Next slide. So I just talked a little bit about the acquisitions. There's a lot of companies out there that we like. Some we've talked to, some we haven't. I can just tell you that from a revenue perspective, you know, we've built everything ourselves to date, both at Passport. Asta's done the same with Cocoon. But certainly there's some deals out there that could get us further along very quickly. We've talked to several of them. There's a high degree of interest. And we certainly have a roadmap of M&A acquisitions should we want to execute on those, but we also have the optionality to build it ourselves because, again, the platforms are highly scalable. But the reality is one of the reasons why I wanted to do a deal like this, and just so you know, Passport has passed up cash offers in and around the same value of what the deal is with Asta Corp for initial consideration. We have passed up cash offers, and the reason I passed them up, because I want, my shareholders want, you know, future opportunity to scale up with a company with accelerated stock growth, equity growth. We didn't want to take cash and walk away. We wanted to play in the U.S., we want to have an impact in the U.S., and we want to have skin in the game. So we passed up several opportunities, one cash, in and around what the deal consideration is here. And the reason I like Asta Corp is because we will have skin in the game. Half the consideration is for Asta stock. So nobody is taking more risk on this than me personally, but I see tremendous upside with both our growth in our current markets, but more importantly, the immense opportunity south of the border. Next page, Brent.
Nope, just turned it.
I'm running a little short on time. I'll speed up the next few slides. So maybe what I'll do here, Brent, is I'll just talk about Cocoon, and then you can flip to the financial pages, which Cleve might want to comment on. But I'll just talk about Cocoon as you flip through the slides here because of this time delay.
Yep.
So Cocoon is an absolute beast of a product. This kiosk integrates with the dispensary's ERP system, enterprise resource planning, that runs their inventory, runs their loyalty, interface with their payment systems. And interesting, with COVID out there now, this product, this omni-channel solution, this self, you know, unattended terminal, can be placed at a dispensary, eliminate FTEs. As minimum wage is going up, all retailers are looking to eliminate people and put in machines. This does that. It accepts ID. It integrates to their inventory system. You can shop. You can browse. You can pay with cash. It's got a cash recycler. It gives out change. It's got an e-wallet, so you can move your change to an e-wallet and buy products with a discount. This product integrates with the back office of the dispensary. It'll drive incremental revenue for the dispensary. It'll reduce costs immediately. And the base model for us is we get a percentage on all transactions that initiate at the Cocoon kiosk. You know, and our first customer, which is Thrive, which is the largest dispensary chain in Nevada, run by one of the most prolific, probably, entrepreneurs in the cannabis space, who's a big believer in technology, he believes up to 60% of his recurring customers will use this kiosk. And again, every transaction initiated at the kiosk, Cocoon will get a percentage of. That is a beautiful business. It's recurring revenue. It's a ton of visibility on that. And again, it's scalable. And the transaction is completed by the patron and by the dispensary. So as soon as we parachute that robot, that kiosk in the dispensary, it starts generating revenue. And again, these can be placed in every legal dispensary in North America today. Again, it's important to note that Cocoon actually integrates into the ERP system, and the APIs that we develop to speak with the ERP system kind of drives the feature functionality. As you look at the cannabis market opportunity in the United States, you know, there's 3,500 units there. Even if we made 5% penetration into that, you know, the revenue that would be derived from that is significant, and the contribution numbers just aren't seen in cannabis today. I will challenge anybody in the cannabis market today to find a better business model than this. We said from day one we wanted to play in the middle. We said that we wanted to be a pick and shovel company, and this is a technology platform that puts us in every legal cannabis market today. The slide you're looking at now is a snapshot of one dispensary, one single dispensary, with very conservative assumptions, assumptions that are lower than what the owner told us he believes to be true. And this is the type of revenue you see for one dispensary in a given month. So it's pretty compelling. So again, you know, looking at the U.S. only, looking at the revenue opportunities from a dispensary penetration in the U.S. only, again, very conservative revenue forecast, penetration of the market. I can tell you now, and I'm sure, you know, Cleve will also comment on this, we are building a, you know, inside sales team, a very robust sales team to penetrate this market. We've got a very deep and broad marketing program to support it. We've got tremendous interest already. We've been in discussions with all the MSOs, all the regional MSOs, large single operators, and we're very excited about the opportunity here going forward. I can't say enough about it, but I'll certainly let Cleve and his team, you know, discuss it over the weeks and months ahead, because that's going to be a real highlight for everybody and all OSA shareholders. You might want to say, well, who's our competition? there really isn't much competition out there. The folks that have tried to get into it, they haven't had the experience of working in highly regulated industries with robust transaction flow like we have from Passport, which we've injected into Cocoon. Some guys are good on the payment side. Some competitors are good on the kiosk side. But we're good on all sides. And a lot of that comes from what Passport has brought to the table, and a lot of it obviously has come from the great team we have at Asa Corporation. So, when I look at the competition, they're out there, but no one has made any credible kind of effort and or impact to any main demographic or jurisdiction to date. I think we'll be the first in Nevada as we install Thrive in the next month. And then I think I'll hand this off to Cleve to talk a bit about the combined P&L.
Yeah, so thanks, Scott. So I think, So first off, what I'd like to say is that this represents a financial example. These are not projections. These are not forecasts. We're not providing guidance at this time. This is an illustration of the type of economic power that this combination has. So what you're looking at here are numbers for Patron, Cocoon, and Passport. What you can see is that your Patron, relatively consistent revenue performance, very consistent business model. Now, Patron is a company that we can scale as needed. You can scale them organically through additions of salespeople. You can scale them inorganically through acquisition of portfolios. So we've kept that at a fairly consistent level, recognizing that there is the potential for pretty high growth there. On the Cocoon side of things, Scott has taken you through the business model for Cocoon and the customer proposition for Cocoon. These numbers obviously represent significant growth, but still a drop in the bucket compared to the overall cannabis market, which is why Cocoon is such a great business for us. And the fact that we can participate in every jurisdiction, regardless of the current legalities around it, means that we can immediately scale up quickly. So we feel pretty good about that. On the Passport side of things, these numbers represent a little bit of organic growth and a little bit of penetration into the U.S., as Scott has described. So we feel very confident that with the technology that we have, with the service that we have, with the hardware that we have, that we're going to be able to make some inroads, both in the countries that we're currently at, but also in the U.S., which represents, a big chunk of the world like gaming market, but even beyond that, countries in South America as well as Asia. So that represents the Passport. This possible acquisition, again, we lined up a couple of different acquisitions that we have the potential to make fairly quick moves on, and we think we're going to make those moves. So this represents a little bit of revenue for the possible acquisition. Overall, when you come down to it and you look at the EBITDA potential for this company as you grow, The business model is such that you spend a little bit of time on development, you create a unit, and you pop the unit into your particular outlet, and it sits there and it generates recurring revenue and fee revenue. So essentially, you're just building up revenues over time as you continue to grow this business. The other thing that I just want to point out really quickly is that part of the investment thesis here is that there are interconnections between the businesses that make the sum greater than the parts, right? And so I've participated in a couple calls here recently with potential clients on both the Patron side as well as the Passport side of things, where the technology behind Passport actually leads to interest from parties on the Patron side of things. So the backbone that you have that has been created by the Passport business is actually attractive to other participants in other parts of the business. So there's some significant revenue synergies that are going to get captured here. So That's very exciting for all of us to do. So this provides you with a look at the EBITDA growth potential here, and this is why we're excited about the potential for shareholder value creation here, because as you can see, as this thing scales up with the growth that you have, with the scalability that you have, and the profitability that you have, ultimately you can kind of run the math and figure out where the share price is going to be in a couple of years, and we're very excited for the shareholders to be able to do this. Brent. So with that, actually, let me actually close this out, and I think we'll turn it over to questions. The one other thing I'd like to say just before I leave here is, or before I turn it over to questions, is just to speak a little bit about the management moves, why we're doing them, how they're going to work, and what's the real purpose here. So, you know, Scott is executive chairman of the board, and I think if you had listened to the presentation, what comes through is his passion for the business, his understanding of the business, his sincere dedication to the team that he's built, and his passion for making this work going forward. And so he's agreed to take a significant chunk of the compensation stock, which basically means he's doubling down, betting on himself, and betting on his team. The role that he's taking, sometimes people interpret that as, you know, someone riding off into the sunset. That's not the case here. Scott is going to be able to focus on the thing that I think his passion really comes through at, which is business development and building this business. My own sort of view on things and my management style is actually quite different from Scott's. Scott has, you know, I've been with Scott since 2018, and I think he has had a good look at kind of how I operate, what I do. I think he's gotten comfortable with that. And, you know, Scott is all about the upside. He's all about the relationships. He's all about the opportunities. That's awesome for what you want. I'm a little bit more analytical. I go through the numbers. I want to conserve cash. I want to be sure we get the proper ROI on things that we invest in. And so, you know, that's what I'm going to do. I'm also interested in building the systems that we need to build in order to really scale this thing well beyond 2023. And those are the types of systems that you go from mid to large companies. And I think the partnership here with both of our participation is really going to benefit the shareholders going into the future. So I think you should look at this management team and the management moves that we've made as really unlocking the potential of this partnership. So I'll leave it at that, and I will open the call up for questions.
Thank you. Ladies and gentlemen, as stated, if you do have a question, please press star followed by 1 on your touch-tone phone. You will hear a 3-tone prompt acknowledging your request. As a reminder, note that there will only be one question per person. And if you would like to withdraw your question, simply press star followed by 2. And we do ask, if you're using a speakerphone, to please lift the handset before pressing any keys. Thank you. And your first question will be from David Salmon. Please go ahead, David.
Good morning, everybody, and thanks for taking this. I'm just curious, in terms of the transaction, you've spoken extensively about the value of Passport. As an Australia shareholder, I have no understanding of the value of Passport myself. There's no disclosure on any of the financial records. You referenced double-digit revenue growth, but I have no idea what context that is in. Will you be disclosing, or can you disclose right now, what the revenue for Passport is in any of the recent quarters or financial years?
So right now we are not disclosing, and we're providing the disclosure that's in the press release. Now I would point you to a couple guideposts that are in the press release. So if you look at the earnout and where those are structured, those are structured as achievable earnouts. They're not stretch targets. They are earnouts that ultimately we anticipate, quite honestly, paying out. And if you look at where those are structured, where those sit, that gives you some sense of what the potential is for this company that would probably provide you with some guideposts and valuation. Now, the other thing that's happening here, too, is I think over the very short term, and I'm talking like weeks, not months, we'll have some announcements about Passport progress. And when those announcements come out, what they will be is you'll see customers being added. And as I've said, in terms of the financial picture of this company, as soon as you add a customer, you're basically adding revenue that builds upon itself. And so that's ultimately how we have confidence in the 2021 numbers. And that's what I'd point you to at the time.
Thank you. Ladies and gentlemen, as a reminder, if you do have a question, please press star followed by 1 on your touchtone phone. And at this time, Mr. Dowdy, your next question will be from Andrew George. Please go ahead.
Hi, Scott. How are you? Hope everything is good. Thank you for sharing your presentation. I noticed that you guys have been shifting away from the cannabis market. You're more integrating this Cocoon technology. And, you know, we liked it, as we discussed earlier in our previous meetings. But long story short, there's a lot of money being paid out. You know, I talked it over with my group, and we're just really concerned with the cash position that we have, since we have nearly 5 million plus every year of our recurring expenses. So it's not really, it's costly. We believe the transaction is costly. We don't know how we can guarantee these forecasted revenues over here that you have here in the slides. So it's not that we don't want to back it up where we're opposing it, but we just need more clarity on the financials and the position of Passport. Because what it looks like to many shareholders, and they've all addressed it this morning, is that they're really concerned with where this is going and how successful it will be. Because if it doesn't turn out to be a success, it's going to be a big bust. So we need more certainty and assurance that Passport has value. It can add significant value to the company, and that its forecasted revenues will restore shareholder value. So if you can please provide more color, that would be great.
Yeah, no, listen, Andrew, thank you for your question, and you always ask good questions, and certainly, you know, I'm sensitive to your concerns. You know, Passport, as I said before, signs long-term exclusive agreements, and almost all the agreements we have now go out 2 to 3, up to 5 years. So the revenue we have is locked in. So we sign long-term exclusive contracts, of which you're going to see a few more announced next week. So from a revenue generation perspective, you know, Passport turned down a very large cash offer earlier this year from a company worth over $100 billion here in the United States. Why did they do that? Because they saw our recurring revenue. They saw our profitability. They loved it. And they always wanted to be in that space, but they can't get in it because they don't have the reputation, they don't have the experience, and they don't have the know-how. So I think when we do our proxy, all this financial data will be there. You're going to absolutely see all this data when OssiCorp sends out the proxy, and you're going to see this data. And I think from a profitability perspective, I'll be honest with you, I believe, some of my shareholders believe, that we sold Passport too cheap, and that we're taking too much equity in Australis. So from my perspective, I actually believe we sold it on a little cheaper than I probably should have, and I'm probably taking a little more Australis stock than I probably wanted to. But here's the deal. I am absolutely committed. I know it's a real story, and you're going to see it in the proxy once you see the financials. And I've got more skin in the game now than anybody. And I want myself, but more importantly, I want all Australis shareholders, stakeholders, to be extremely successful with this. And guys, you know, with 2 years of data behind us and all the dead bodies in the cannabis landscape, this is an incredible opportunity for OssiCorp. And just lastly, Andrew, you know, Australis has never been more in the cannabis business than now, because we can be in every jurisdiction with Cocoon today. Without Cocoon, we can only be in state by state if we were an MSO or a dispensary or a grow. So I would just say OSSA has never been more entrenched in cannabis than it is now with Cocoon. It's just now expanded to be in another highly regulated industry with very good revenue, great profitability, and immense opportunity to grow. And just the last thing, Andrew, once the casinos open up in Ontario, go to any gateway property and you'll see Passport technology hard at work.
And I'll just touch on a little bit of that, because you mentioned some of the cash impact. it was important to understand what the downside looked like on this for me personally in terms of the cash burn to Australis. And so we spent a lot of time thinking about the cash cycle here and making sure that we ran the right sensitivities, you know, assuming maybe the casinos don't open up quite as quickly as people think they are. So we stressed some of those out, we stress tested it, and we tried to figure out whether or not we'd ever be in a cash hole. We feel pretty good about the cash impacts here, primarily because if you look at the business model, it's not a working capital intensive business model. It's not a capital hungry business model. If you just look at like the Thrive model, where the units cost about $14,000 per unit, and the amount of revenue that they generate on a consistent basis, it doesn't require a whole lot. Now, that's in comparison to if you look at the cannabis world, the types of capex that are required for building out grow operations, buying grow operations, or starting a dispensary puts you in, quite honestly, in that world at much more risk from a capital standpoint. So, you know, we looked at this very carefully. We ran a bunch of sensitivities, ran a bunch of downside. We're also going out for a private placement as one way to shore up the capital and make sure that we have enough. We built that with a level and a margin of error too. So, you know, we're not necessarily beholden to that, but that is one of the things that we're trying to do, because it's obviously balanced against the need to just not try to raise too much capital, but raise a judicious amount. So that's where we're at on those.
Thank you. And the last question will be coming from Oliver Klosoff. Please go ahead, Oliver.
Hi, it's Klosoff. I was just wondering, this question's for Scott. It's just, what is your percentage ownership in Passport and the percentage ownership of your other family members?
Yeah, I own 51%, and my brother would own, I believe, don't quote me on this, it's like 7.5 or maybe around 8%, a little less than 8%.
Ladies and gentlemen, this does conclude the question and answer period.
Thank you.
Thanks very much, everyone. No, you can go ahead.
Go ahead. No, Brent. This is your call.
Thanks, everyone, for joining the call today. We hope you found it informative. We look forward to providing more details and updates on the business as we move forward. Obviously, you sense the excitement from the management team today, and we'll be coming out to investors with regular updates as time goes on.
Thank you. Ladies and gentlemen, this does indeed conclude your meeting for today. Once again, thank you for attending. And at this time, we do ask that you please disconnect your lines. Have yourself a great weekend.